I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's gray skies over West London. What else is new? But it's not raining. But it's okay because we're going to brighten things up. We'll be talking some African Cup of Nations. We'll be talking Dusan Vlahovic. Finally, very close. We got transfers. Yeah. Windows ticking down. But let's start at the AFCON because this weekend we're hitting the quarterfinal stage. Some big games coming up. And we're joined by Ed Dove to talk about this. Ed, at the start of the tournament, we had this idea of who the favorites were and so on. And
some even said what the final was going to be.
Exactly. You know, we heard Algeria, undefeated for so long, Ivory Coast.
Like some said, like, Nigeria, Ivory Coast would be a final. I don't know who said that.
I don't know. Can't imagine who banked on Nigeria especially without Osimhen and Dennis, but whatever. But we have our quarterfinalists.
Yeah.
And I just want to wanted you to look at them for us. I'm going to start at the end. I'm going to start with Egypt and Morocco. Because for the longest time, we had this idea that, oh, look, Egypt, they play dour football, but they're tactically smart, and that's why they go and they dominate Africa, and they've won so many. And yet, going into this tournament, many were very, very low on them. And they were also low on Morocco as well, including Julien, who said, I think you said, it's Salah and nobody else.
Well, it still is.
Is it still that bad? How do you see Egypt and Morocco?
Well, Egypt have scored 2 goals so far all tournament, despite being in a group with Guinea-Bissau and Sudan. So I'm not getting too excited. But at the same time, they did take 21 shots against Ivory Coast. And I think it is a little bit reductive to say they're just Salah and no one else. I think there is organization, the structure. It's what you're going to get from Carlos Queiroz. But they have now, they got 2 wins in the group. Then they've advanced past Ivory Coast. So they do have momentum. And there's a sense of destiny, actually, about this Egypt team heading into the quarterfinals.
And you're playing Morocco. They're clear favorites. It's not like...
What do you mean clear favorite? They're not clear favorite. They're favorite. What?
Is Hakim Ziyech going to go and fly down and join all of a sudden mid-tournament?
Vahid and his team have other assets. And, you know,
they're your favorites, really, though, Egypt over Morocco. Yes.
Morocco for me. They do have Boufal. I'm not sure about clear favourites. So I think that Egypt, they're looking rugged. I think they're looking very combative. And Morocco, while they do have quality individuals and they do have difference makers, like we've seen 2 outrageous Hakimi free kicks against Gabon and then against Malawi. But there is a lack of cutting edge, maybe, despite having En-Nesyri, despite having Ayoub El Kabi. They're not quite clicking an attack, as far as I'm concerned.
Gambia against the host Cameroon. Gambia, I don't want to say they're the minnows of the tournament because we've had other more minnows, but this is pretty incredible. Can they trip up the host nation?
Yeah, I think they can. I mean, they are 150th in the world, so I think minnows is fair. There are some memes and jokes thing around in Cameroon that Cameroon have already got hold of Gambia's COVID test results after what happened to the Comoros team. But I think Gambia, they're maybe the perfect candidates to upset the apple cart because this is exactly what they do. They don't make any bones about it. They hold on for 70, 80 minutes. Then, like their scorpion nickname suggests, they've got a sting in the tail at the death. And I think it's certainly possible,
And they have a bit of Italian steel as well in their coaching staff. It's more like Italy from the 70s, but still. Senegal against Equatorial Guinea. Look,
my boys.
All right, Senegal, a lot of people had them as favorites before the tournament.
Yeah,
talk about slow starters here, though. It's not Equatorial Guinea, this is where Senegal kick into gear, right? And wipe them away.
I'm not convinced. By the way, I did predict that Gambia and Equatorial Guinea would make the quarters. So,
Nigeria prediction.
I did get this one right. And I think Equatorial Guinea can't be underestimated. They've got a very technical, a very robust, very physical midfield. And like you say, Senegal, they haven't clicked. They're still, as far as I'm concerned, they're lacking midfield creativity. And Sadio Mane obviously made the difference against Cape Verde, but he's not looking at his best as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think he'll be enough alone for Senegal to go the distance.
This sounds like so far we got things pretty wide open.
It's going to be great games.
For the fourth quarterfinal, of course, is Burkina Faso against Tunisia. Burkina Faso coming through in that incredible. I thought it was pretty incredible that penalty shootout. Tunisia's blown hot and cold, but coming strong again when it matters. But Burkinabes, are they our favorites here?
Tough one to call. I think Tunisia, what we saw against Nigeria, that so well disciplined, so well organized. They weren't fazed by this Nigeria team who had been rampant in the group stage, who had romped through that group. I think this one's a very tough one to call. I'd love to see Bertrand Traore really take the game by the scruff of his neck, because we see moments of excellence from him, which are then followed up by a skewed shot into the stands or a pass to the opposition. I would love it if he could really show what he could do in this fixture.
I'm going Burkina Faso.
I'm going
here.
Tunisia, 100%.
Really?
Yeah. Wahbi Khazri. Watch Wahbi Khazri in the game.
Wahbi Khazri. Yeah. Better late than never. And I want to ask you about the tournament as a whole. And then we'll get into more broader questions about African football. But obviously we have to talk about the tragedy that took place when Cameroon played Comoros. The stampede, which sadly left, I think it was 8 people losing their lives. You were there. Can you talk a little bit about kind of what you knew, when you knew it, and how that affected the mood?
So obviously the context of that match is very important, because we went into the game with this remarkable story about the Comoros not having any goalkeepers. So the attention of myself and on, I think, the vast majority of the media was on who's going to play in goal for Comoros. We already had a remarkable, kind of unprecedented situation at the Nations Cup. And then as the game went on, reports started filtering through about what was happening outside the ground, and that there had been, you know how these things happen, the reports come in drips. So you have kind of reports of bousculade, which is like kind of stampede or kind of rioting or jostling. Then you have kind of reports of people injured. Then you have reports of bodies. And then the death toll starts becoming clearer. I heard sirens during the game, but as anyone who's been to a match in Africa will know, that that's not an unheard of thing. You know, you often have sirens accompanying dignitaries or accompanying celebrities to games. So that in itself wasn't anything out of the ordinary. It was only later that, you know, you reflect, and they were ambulances that were taking people from the site of the injury and bodies away to medical facilities.
What was the atmosphere like? Is it, you know, the stampede is terrible. I don't know how CAF are going to do the investigation. I think there's already a few issues with getting information from the Cameroon, like police, government, and etc. To find what happened and who was at fault to cause this. And how has been the whole tournament for you as an experience?
Sure. And just on the back of that, just when you talk about the investigation and CAF and people pulling out old stereotypes about Africa, let's not forget that, 6 months ago, we were at a final of the European Championships, the equivalent of the AFCON, 6 months away, and there were, you know, thankfully no deaths, but there was chaos and a stampede and people overwhelmed. So this is not something peculiarly African. You know, we saw it happen a few miles away from here at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, so on that last point, CAF had a hearing yesterday with the local organising committee, and there is an investigation that's taking place to understand the circumstances, understand the causes, understand the context that gave rise to this tragedy. Patrice Motsepe, the CAF president, said on Tuesday that there will be no more games taking place at Alembe until he's received assurances that the reasons behind this have been identified and that guarantees can be made that it won't happen again. So the quarterfinal has been moved away from Alembe, and it remains to be seen whether the semi and the final will take place there. Gab, you're absolutely right that this is not just an African problem. However, we have seen, whereas Wembley got away with it, you could say, with no deaths, with broken ribs, with injuries, but with no deaths, we have seen in Africa, Abidjan, Ellis Park, Oppenheimer, Accra Stadium, Port Said, obviously different reasons there, Madagascar. Africa has a track record as far as poor stadium safety resulting in deaths is concerned. And I think this is a real opportunity for Motsepe early in his presidency to really establish, I wrote it, kind of a toolkit, a stadium safety toolkit, to ensure that this kind of thing becomes, maybe Olembe could be the end of this, rather than another statistic, rather than just another chapter in what is a very tragic track record.
I'm just fascinated by something, going back just on the pitch in that game. Obviously, you had the Comoros, because he's the reserve left back, playing in playing goal. Thank you, Jules. So I'm watching this on television, and you can see he looks like an outfield player.
He doesn't use his hands. At some point, I think he's...
He made the one save on the line where he reaches across with his wrong hand and paws it away. What did it feel like when you're there, when you're seeing him, in the stadium, off the ball? Did it just look weird for like 90 minutes?
Well, the fact that he's, I think, 5'7" certainly didn't help. He's not a natural frame or build for a goalkeeper. I spoke to Alhaj there afterwards, actually, and it was quite amazing how, even though Comoros had gone out, even though there'd been the controversy over the goalkeepers, even though there'd been this early red card for Najim Abdou, Alhadeh was actually, that was probably the greatest night of his life, because he was so delighted to have made his Nations Cup bow. This guy's 30, he's been playing for Comoros since 2014, but the tournament was kind of in danger of passing him by. And actually, I asked him, how was he so cool? How was he so unruffled, actually? Because, he made a few good saves, lovely left foot when it comes to goal kicks. And I thought he did himself proud, as did all of Comoros, actually, during the whole tournament and that match.
In the first half, I think it's Aboubakar come in, and because he's a defender, when you defend a 1v1 in your box, you put your arms behind your back, right, as a defender. Yeah. And he actually does that as a goalkeeper, and he said he gave a really great interview. I'm sure you've seen it in L'Équipe. I think it was on Wednesday, to talk about the whole night and how they thought until the end that Ali Hamada, the one of the goalkeepers who then tested negative, would be allowed to play, and he wasn't in the end. So until pretty much close to kickoff, they were convinced that they would have had a goalkeeper and he would just play a left back, and instead he didn't. But he said, like, everybody told me the hardest bit would be to change from a defender and play this game as a defender to a goalkeeper, and people say, use your hands. Yeah, of course.
I just thought it was ironic that when Aboubakar scores, he's one-on-one with him. He does it with a little kind of, with a sort of move that, by putting the little move on him and kind of dribbling around him, which you would have expected as a left back, that would have been your bread and butter, right? I want to talk about how, in Africa, often you have political things happening off the pitch, and we've seen what's happening in Burkina Faso, where, I don't know if it's appropriate to call it a coup, but from reports, the military have taken control. There was shooting on the streets, I think, even as they were playing. What sort of sense have you gotten from this? I mean, are there Burkina Faso fans there who are wondering, like, well, what happens when I go home? Or indeed Burkina Faso players? Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, it's not the first time this has happened during this kind of tournament cycle as well, because obviously Morocco and Guinea found themselves in the midst of a coup d'etat in Conakry ahead of their game, their qualifier between the two teams. Certainly in terms of Burkina Faso, that was, it was on the minds of players in the aftermath of that match. But I think before the game, what players are like, it's very much kind of tunnel focus when it comes to, a game like that and on getting the results on their specific jobs. But certainly afterwards, there was a sense that it had been done for the country, but for the people who are suffering in Burkina Faso. But obviously there's this uncertainty about Roch Kabore and his current state and the current state of governance in the country. And while politics and African football are kind of regular bedfellows, I think players are savvy enough to know, especially when things are in transition, perhaps not to necessarily nail their colours to a certain mast too early.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't expect that. I'm just wondering about, their families. No, of course, safe? When there's violence, there's violence. We touched upon this earlier, kind of like the Minnow story, and obviously Comoros were like an ultimate Minnow. I know Equatorial Guinea, maybe not Minnows because they have more of a footballing tradition.
But still.
Perhaps, and they hosted an AFCON. But still, I mean, on paper, though, we have several kind of underdog situations that we touched upon. Gambia is a teeny tiny, oddly shaped country. By the way, you know more about Africa than I do. Why do we call it the Gambia, but we don't call it the Cameroon or the France? Is there some weird colonial historical reason for that?
I think it's something to do with the way that the Gambia was created by the English in order to take control of the banks of the river that goes into Senegal so that France didn't have a monopoly over the trading opportunity that that river provided. And so the Gambia, it was like, it was originally called something like the Gambia Company or the Gambia Outpost or something like that, which is then became the Gambia. And it, Julian, you maybe know better than me. Yeah. Don't the French have a nickname for the Gambia? Something like the anal thermometer of Africa, but maybe you know in French.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
All right. Like well, on that note, the Gambia have produced a whole bunch of footballers in recent years.
And you've got a few in Italy. Yeah.
We have a bunch in Italy. We have a distinct Italian connection with the Gambia, not just because of Moussa Barrow. But you touched upon this earlier. Defend, counter, make it tough, kind of be nasty to play against. That's going to be the right strategy against Cameroon. And you also made a joke because Cameroon were played Comoros before. You had the situation with the COVID test. I mean, is there a sense among other teams about that somehow Cameroon are getting more than the usual sense of host nation favors?
Yes, there's two things. First of all, there's that, which started right before the tournament with the Burkina Faso, the controversy, in inverted commas, around the Burkina Faso tests ahead of their opening game against Cameroon, when Burkina Faso complained that a non-CAF-sanctioned medical team had turned up at the hotel, taken the tests, and they'd learned that a swathe of players had been prevented from playing on the eve of the game. Bertrand Traoré called it a scandal. And then since then, particularly with the Comoros game, there has been, you know, it's partly jokey, but it's at the same, there is some seriousness behind it. Ivory Coast kind of fans actively have been baiting their Cameroonian counterparts on social media, accusing them of cheating. And we have had a little bit of that among the managers and the coaches, particularly Malawi, who said, not that it was Cameroon favoritism, but that there was a certain, he said that the smaller teams were treated like second-class citizens in Cameroon. He said that Sadio Mane would never have to wash his own underpants, whereas the Malawi team were being forced to do their own laundry. Gambia have complained about the state of their facilities, their hotel, as have some of the other smaller teams. Comoros have had similar complaints. So I think there is partly a sense of Cameroon favoritism or Cameroon bias, but there's also a sense, or I guess of the, there are machinations going on that are in favor of Cameroon, but at the same time, there's also this bias against the Minnows.
I mean, the Minnows have been a great story.
Yeah, really, that's the irony. They've been a tremendous story and they've gone
but
far.
But again, I think, and Ed, just tell me if you disagree, but the physicality that we've seen, which is a big feature in this tournament, was expecting anyway. They're really tough teams to play against. They're hard to break down, most of them, even the most favorite. There's a lack of creativity, I think, in a lot of the games that we've seen. Some games have been great, but still in terms of creating chances and bringing that sort of creativity into it, and even patterns of play that bring you that, I think that has been lacking too. And to a certain extent as well, the big stars are yet to shine a little bit. And it's good, the quarterfinals are coming, you still have big players and big teams. But we saw Mo Salah maybe having his best game against Ivory Coast. I think we're still waiting for Sadio Mane to have his best game, although he was very good against Cape Verde. But so all that is putting in place. But so far, Ed, you haven't been surprised by much, right, in terms of football on the pitch?
No, I think having seen particularly what Gambia did in qualifying, I mean, Gambia drew with Algeria away in Blida before the 2019 Nations Cup. So this Gambia progress, it's come from far away. It's not just something which is kind of happening here in the tournament. Equatorial Guinea also defeated Tunisia in qualifying. They were in the race for a World Cup playoff spot until the last day. So it's not like they've just turned up and they're impressing here. I think what's helping specifically Comoros and Equatorial Guinea, and maybe even Cape Verde, is the increasing presence of players who were formed in European academies, who have been with European clubs since they were maybe youngsters. And it's given a certain level of freshness to the team and a certain level of technical awareness. I would say teams like Sudan or Ethiopia, where the players are predominantly formed in the country, maybe even still play in the country, there's a gulf there, in my opinion. And yeah. Comoros and Equatorial Guinea have bridged that gulf to meet up with the likes of Burkina Faso and the kind of the middle class of African football nations, whereas teams who are less reliant on players who have been formed in Europe or who have had extensive time spent with coaches since they were young, with the trainers, I think that's a big difference there.
I want to ask about Senegal. Obviously, pre-tournament favorites for the bookmakers anyway, and a lot of big names. And specifically, Sadio Mane, because he had this head injury. I pick up the paper here, and it's all about, I'm not saying concussions aren't important, but there's a sense, concussion protocol, are they following it? They're in Africa, blah, blah, blah. You know,
they should not have to on pitch, full stop.
I want to get your take on that because, and again, we've seen this happen. It's not just an African thing. We've seen players want to stay on the pitch and so on. Mm. And there's always the question of, well, remember the 2018 World Cup was it Uruguay? Or maybe it was 2014. I don't know. I forget. I get old. Where the Uruguayan team torture, I think it was Alvaro Pereira, or Arvalo.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Comes on the pitch and he's like, the guy's clearly wiped out. He's looking at him like, he's flying, keep playing. I mean, is this a thing? Has this been a talking point? Is it something that people should be worried about? Jules says he shouldn't have stayed on the pitch. What's your take? I mean, do you agree with Dr. Lawrence, MD, who gave Sadio Mane a full examination pitch side?
Yeah, I completely agree with Dr. Lawrence. I think as soon as he goes down and his head hits the turf, like, that's not a player who should be competing at that level of sport in the next few hours, let alone the next 7 minutes. And okay, so Sadio Mane then scored the goal in the kind of immediate aftermath of that incident and then was replaced. I wouldn't have let him get back on the pitch. And there was no way. I mean, Cape Verde goalkeeper Jorginho was harder hit, both literally and figuratively. And he was, there was no doubt that he was not going to go back on the pitch, even if he tried. But Cape Verde were very quick to take him off. He then was sent off, so it became a moot point. But there's no way Mane should have been.
Why are Senegal not firing on all cylinders? I mean, one obvious thing that was raised to me by one scout who's there right now, he said these teams, especially a lot of the bigger teams, they have a lot of stars, but they've had no time to prepare because they arrived late. They didn't have the pre-tournament friendlies or the training camp that you have. They just kind of went out on the pitch. Everybody's gunning for them as well.
I know, but this team has been playing together for a long time. It's the same. They reached the final 3 years ago. This is the same coach. This should not be an excuse of, they didn't have time to prepare. They know each other well enough to be playing better than this.
But they're still playing differently than the way they play at club level, right?
It's still people coming together. It's the same for every national team.
Okay, so Jules thinks it's a lame excuse. Is it a lame excuse, Ed? I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
Well, I think the fact they've been playing together for a long time, actually, maybe that's obviously helps them defensively. It helps them in terms of organisation and automism, but it hasn't helped them find creativity. This was a problem for them in the past because there is, if a midfield of Kouyaté, Idrissa Gueye and Nampalis Mendy, with Idrissa Gueye as the most creative of that midfield three, there's only so much you're going to get from that. And I think with Mane on the left, once you move Mane into a 10 and then you sacrifice one of those defensive midfielders, which I don't think Aliou Cissé will do. He loves defensive midfielders.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a problem for Senegal.
Yeah.
But also they played their first two matches at 2 o'clock, which I think can't be underestimated, because the heat at 2 o'clock here compared to what you have at 5, compared to what you have at 8 o'clock, it's completely different. Here, 8 o'clock here last night was 24 degrees, whereas 2 o'clock can be 35 degrees when Senegal, or 36 when Senegal were playing. So it's maybe understandable that in those opening games against Guinea and against Zimbabwe, they weren't firing on all cylinders.
Ed, thank you so much. It's been an education. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough AFCON. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
Now, as we record this, the deal is not quite done, yes. But Jules, Fiorentina and Juventus have reached an agreement on a transfer price for Dusan Vlahovic. There's also, we're told, there's an agreement in place on the player's contract, too.
Yeah.
And all they got to figure out is the commissions. Exactly. They're very confident. How much does this move the needle in terms of getting Juve into the top four, maybe even doing something in the Champions League this season?
I think this is huge, Gab. This is not all the answer to all the problems because you still will have to create the chances for Vlahovic to score them. And I think the problem is often for Juve to get the ball in the box in the right situation and create the right chances, but it's huge. He's an amazing player. We've said that. You can explain to us how they find the 75 million euros to pay for that, and it's down to capitalization and revalorization to the club and all of that. Great for them, but we didn't think it was going to be possible. They found a way. Great, because he's a great signing.
We think it was possible also because the commissions that his agents are asking for. And again, still no deal on it. They're very confident that they can get it done. Yeah. I think it's out in the open now because Vlahovic can't go back to Florence.
I mean, the hatred is even more bigger now.
And there's historical reasons. Juventus took Federico Chiesa going back in the years. They took Roberto Baggio, too, never wanted to leave, supposedly. It's pretty remarkable. I think this price, which I was told was 70 million euros, plus 5 million in easy bonuses, plus 5 million in difficult bonuses. Yeah. I think this is actually a really good deal for Fiorentina.
It is. Gab, Vlahovic's arrival could have big implications as well, of course, on the future of Alvaro Morata and Paulo Dybala. Is Morata getting his move to Barcelona and is Dybala getting the new deal that he wants?
So I don't think Morata's getting his deal to Barcelona now, simply because all the difficulties with Barcelona in terms of selling players and stuff, they're still in place. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to be there next season. Remember, he's only on loan. Juventus would want at least, Juventus are paying 10 million euros in loan fee. It's really a down payment on making his move permanent. Barcelona would have to cover 5 of that, plus his wages. I think it's very, very difficult for them to get it all the time. Plus, Allegri doesn't want him to leave. Dybala, you know my feelings. If I were in charge, I'd go back to him and say, like, look, Paolo, we need you even less now. We're going to spend money on wingers. Chiesa's coming back. We got Kulusevski. We've got people in wide areas. Let's spend money on that. Let's get younger.
Yeah.
No official confirmation yet, but Fabrizio Romano and others reporting that Julian Alvarez's move to Manchester City is a done deal. We're talking 18.5 million euros. Jules, makes sense to you? And does this mean no Harry Kane?
No Harry Kane. People who listen to this show and watch this show know how big fan we are of Julian Alvarez, the future of Argentine football. He's 21 years old. He's had an incredible last 18 months, really, with River. 18.5 million euros, I think, is a bargain. He's going to stay on loan and then come to City in the summer. I just can't wait to see him working with Pep. I think this could be wonderful.
That really is a bargain.
It really is a bargain. Speaking of Tottenham, Antonio Conte could be getting help in midfield. They're linked with Sofyan Amrabat for Fiorentina. Gab, it's a loan with an option to buy of 30 million euros. You buying this?
Like, he wants an extra body in midfield. He needs other people in midfield. If he can't have Frank Kessie, who, by the way, got injured, if he can't get a superstar, get another guy in the middle of the park because, you know, then Dombele, the alley trails are pretty much over. He's familiar with the player. He's not going to hurt if they get this done. But I think Amrabat's also quite important for Fiorentina as well. Not done with Spurs just yet. They reportedly had a 45 million euro bid for Porto's Luis Diaz rejected. Mm. And they're still in the hunt for Adama Traoré too. You love Luis Diaz, yeah?
Oh, God. Fantastic. His release clause is 90 million. They've offered half that. You can understand why that was rejected.
That ain't going to happen.
I think they're going to try to put players in the deal with the swap. Like, hey, we can have Lo Celso, who doesn't want to go, by the way. And 45 million, would you take that? I think Luis Diaz is too good for 45 million deal. He has to go higher. I don't think they will go higher than that.
Do you think they would get both, him and Traoré? Or is it?
I think it's one or the other.
Yeah. I think so, too.
Gab, this is a quote from FIFA President Gianni Infantino on the subject of a Bayern World Cup. We need to find ways to include the whole world to give hope to Africans so they don't need to cross the Mediterranean in order to find maybe a better life, but more probably death in the sea. I mean, I want your thoughts, but I cannot believe that those words actually came out of his mouth.
Yeah, I think he regrets. He regrets this from the moment he said it, because it also doesn't really make sense, because he's gone off the biennial World Cup now. Not in so many words. He still like it, and it comes, in fairness to him, it comes in the context of talking about, you know, right now Europe has all the money and everything, and you know, it's an idea of sharing with the rest of the world. The rest of the world pays to watch Europeans play football, but they don't get the riches and so on. Fine, but you cannot make an analogy between having a two-year World Cup and migrants taking to the water and dying on their way to Europe. There's no universe in which that is appropriate
or
acceptable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's very strong in Africa. He's got a lot of backing in Africa. I don't think he meant for this. I think it would be more than okay for him to come out and say, I apologize. I chose my words incorrectly. I think he should.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Jules, I haven't watched the Neymar documentary, largely because I'm saving myself for the watch party that he and his sister have organized for her birthday. But I'm going to assume, no, her birthday. But I'm guessing you have. Anything jump out at you?
So his birthday is coming before his sister's, by the way. So he will have a party first with her.
Referencing this injury
and
in his sister's birthday.
You know, I haven't watched it because I've watched a lot of AFCON, and I even watched Angers Saint-Etienne last night. So it was one for tonight. I'm told I'm in it somehow, yeah. Shaka Hislop, as we know, is in it as well, calling him a diva. And I think that's one of the reasons why Neymar said, hey, have you heard Shaka Hislop slagging me off? So I'm going to do a documentary. I don't know. I want to go in with an open mind and say, like, I'm all in if we see some, like, inside stuff and he wants to have a voice and say what he wants to people. It's all good. Then we can, once I watch it, I can tell you and criticize it.
We will revisit this.
Okay. Contract talks between Niklas Süle and Bayern Munich are reportedly dead, Gab, which means he will be a free agent this summer. He's 26, and you're a big fan, far bigger than I am.
I am a huge fan of the big man. But because I think he's tall, I think he's good on the ball. And I know you're going to say, he's slow, but no, he's not actually. He's got the long legs. Once he gets moving, he's quick. He's smart. 26 is a good age. I think this is an interesting situation for them, because to me, this suggests that they have to be in the market now for another defender. I know that he went the back three, Pavard, Lucas Hernandez. It's not a long-term solution, I think.
They find a backup one. Like, go and get Christensen. Then in that case, it's the same.
Maybe
an upgrade.
Even. Maybe Süle to Chelsea and Christensen to Bayern Munich. How about that? But I don't. I think he's a useful player. I don't. 26 years old.
As a backup, right? He's not going to start for any of the top clubs. We agree to that, yeah?
I don't know. I mean, we have Azpilicueta starting for Chelsea at 33 years of age. We've had Trevoh Chalobah starting. We've had Eric Garcia starting for Barcelona. I don't think it's that absurd to suggest that Nicolas Süle can't start for a top
club. You are a big fan.
I am a big fan. Anthony Martial, speaking of big fans, loan move to Sevilla is now official. And it even had the stamp of approval of the original Ronaldo, O Fenomeno himself.
O Fenomeno.
Jules, I think this is pretty big.
It is big in the title race, of course, in La Liga, because I think he can bring a lot to this Sevilla team who need, as we said before, bodies, goal scorers. And Isiri is away right now with Morocco. You've got Rafa Mir. I think Marcel can do well, can really contribute well to this team if he settles in quickly, and he's certainly very happy to be there. So let's see. It's a loan move, and then they reassess the situation in the summer. It's a big 4.5 months to come for Sevilla, Lopetegui and Marcel. On the other hand, a guy who likely won't be leaving Old Trafford, Gab, on loan is Jesse Lingard, and he's not happy at all about it.
So this is a weird one. So I think from Lingard's perspective, despite all the talk about the World Cup and whatever, it actually makes sense for his career to stay and go and move as a free agent.
100%.
What I don't understand is If these reports are true, I can only assume they're coming from Lingard's camp. United want £2.5 million loan fee.
Which is acceptable, which is, I think, for a player like him, you know.
It's plus, you have to cover his wages. Plus, then you pay another $12 million
That's
if
the one.
Newcastle avoid relegation.
That's the one. That's crazy.
At that point, I'm saying, whoa, well, what are you doing here? You know, Lingard, of course, could take a drop in his wages and make this happen, at least short term or whatever. I think it's disappointing when you have guys who don't play. And I actually think a motivated Lingard, in terms of the type of player he is, the activity he brings, could have worked in a Rangnick system. But of course, if you're United, you don't know who the manager's going to be next season.
Yeah, yeah.
Ansu Fati, meanwhile, won't have a surgery in his hamstring injury, but will instead undergo a three-month rehabilitation. Jules, I guess it means we could see him at the very end of the season?
Yeah, we could, Gab. It's really sad in a way, another injury, and this is a big one. He was crying when he came off the pitch. It was either you take the surgery option, and it might be quicker, but it's a surgery again. And remember how many he had in the past when he was out for that injury, 10 months. Or you don't, and you go down that route. The problem is, I'm not even sure after 3 months of rehabilitation how fit he will be, but, and if he will be ready to come back.
You know, we spoke to somebody recently who's a performance specialist, and he said, you know, the problem with going to see knee surgeons is, you know, there's,
yeah, of course.
You know, it's like those, you know, it's like a hammer thinks everything is a nail, right? And so they're like, oh, I'm a knee surgeon. Of course, sure, I recommend surgery.
Yeah.
Good for him that he's taking his time.
Yeah,
he's young
enough.
It's best to do things right, I think.
But it's such a sad situation. Inter have reached a deal for Robin Gosens. It's an 18-month loan with an obligation to buy for €25 million for Atalanta. It's a good deal, Gab. And what does that mean for Perisic?
I think this is a tremendous deal.
It's fantastic.
We love saying he's the highest scoring defender in Europe's biggest five
leagues. Of course.
You can debate whether he's really a defender, but if you're going to play three at the back, there aren't many that better in this in this role. And it gives you tremendous leverage over Ivan Perisic, because Ivan Perisic, you know, he wanted €6 million net a year. That's a lot of money for Inter with the way they are now. That's more than $200,000 a week. He's getting older. Now Inter can go say, hey, Ivan, we have your replacement. If you want to stay, this is the price.
Yep.
If not, good luck on the open market. So I've been so critical of Inter's transfer moves over the years. This is one I think that they got 100% right. Back to Barcelona as Ousmane Dembele's agent hits back at the club while apparently fielding calls from Leonardo and Paris Saint-Germain.
Oh, you would love this. Comes out, Moussa Sissoko, Dembele's agent, comes out of the airport.
By the way, it's
Barcelona.
Not that Moussa Sissoko,
yeah,
just to be
one,
clear.
Course,
yeah, it's a different
one.
Moussa Sissoko.
It's a different one. Comes out with his phone in his hand and he's like little... not suitcase,
but briefcase. Like
briefcase, that's it. And on the phone, you see Leonardo PhD calling and it's picked up, obviously, by the photographers and the cameras that were there.
From El Chiringuito, they get forensic,
Chiringuito,
man.
And Sexta and all of that. We know Leonardo is quite close to Moussa Sissoko, and certainly they've been looking at Dembele before. I don't know if he was on purpose or not. I think
you think he purposely showed it?
I don't know, look who's calling. The biggest news is,
by the way,
it was his mum, it was his dad calling,
yeah,
but he put
exactly.
Leonardo PSG.
Exactly.
So the fact that he's in town for more talks, I don't know if there's a way back for Dembele and to agree a deal or something.
He had harsh words for the club.
Yeah, but it's a good sign that Moussa Sissoko is in Barcelona right now. And by the way, he came from London, not because he was in London negotiating with a London club, because he lives in London. I mean, those... some people in Spain just can't put two and two together.
So. Well, Moussa Sissoko, he's African. He must be either, he must either live in France or in Africa. Where else could he possibly live?
Right?
Come on, man.
Since our last show, Gab, Claudio Ranieri has been sacked at Watford and he's been replaced by someone even older than him, Roy Hodgson. He's never been relegated. I guess that's the only way you can see that positively.
Oh, look,
why? Tell me why.
I don't quite get this. I like Roy Hodgson. He's always been very kind to me. He turned 75. He's older. I don't know.
You know the Pozzo family well. Why? Like, they sacked him when he was at Udinese 20 years ago.
But they regretted it. Because the weird story
okay.
is... No.
So
listen, no, this is a good story. 20 years ago, 2001-2002 season, he comes back to Serie A at Udinese. They actually have a good team. They're playing in the UEFA Cup. Up. They're ninth on the table. He gives an interview, which he's always kind of denied, since it was taken out of context, where he says, oh, I'm glad I'm back at Serie A. I wish it was at a higher level, at a bigger club. They get angry. They sack him on the spot. And then they nearly get relegated. So I like the year, the fact that 20 years later, you know, they kiss and make up. Okay. Good luck, Roy. Right. Jules, many of us at Ivory Coast is the most talented team in the competition, and you were showing no love for Egypt. How did Ivory Coast manage to screw this up once again with all the talent?
It's a good question. Penalty shootout against Egypt, of course. Everybody misses it. I mean, I don't know with the run-up. I don't know what's going on. Maybe he's waiting for the keeper to go one way. This is bad. It's bad that they're not even in the World Cup playoff. It's bad that they organize the next Africa Cup of Nations, and I don't know in what kind of state they will be, but I think there's a big introspection to be made there.
Sort it out, elephants.
Yeah. Another dramatic shootout at the AFCON. Equatorial Guinea somehow getting past Mali after missing the opener.
Yeah, and the one who missed the opener was their captain, their most experienced player. Yeah. And Sue, he looked like a ghost afterwards.
He thought, I've lost us to get the tie. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they keep going. They some badly taken penalties on the other side, and boom, they're through. And Equatorial Guinea,
fantastic story, I think, at
this AFCON. Newcastle are reportedly close to picking up Bruno Guimaraes, even though Olympique Lyonnais deny it. Jules, what's going on? Is he just trying to escape from Peter Bosch?
Well, it's more Lyon trying to get a few more millions, trying to calm down their fans who went ballistic yesterday when a few of us reported the story, because they've agreed a deal in principle. It's all about the structure. Newcastle want to pay over the 5 years of the player's contract, as you do. Lyon, I think, won less installments because they need the money. I think that's why they took the money. They bought him for 20 2 years ago, almost to the day. They can sell him for 40. I think this is the appeal because it doesn't make any sense. He's their best player. He's been one of Ligue 1's best players since he arrived 2 years ago. Okay, he needed a little bit of time to adapt to the physicality of the league at the beginning. But once he did that, he was fantastic. He's a fantastic player. I cannot stress enough how cool this is for Newcastle if they pull it out. So I believe it will happen. He wants to go there. It's a huge pay rise for him. Like, we're talking 4 times what he's earning right now in France. He's away with Brazil. He will do his medical on Friday after the Ecuador game. They're in Ecuador now in Quito. I don't know why bigger clubs have not gone from him now. I believe it's because they waited for the summer, not believing that he could be snatched by someone else now. And again, well done to Newcastle if that happens, because he's a really, really, really good player.
I'm assuming for Newcastle, you would think it wouldn't be an issue to pay all the money up front.
No, although that sent the wrong message, though, I think. Because if you do that with this deal, every other club that you're going to deal with are saying, oh, you did that for Guimaraes at Lyon, we want the same. No. So if you go and want to buy someone for 150 million, the risk is, once you've done it once, the...
Okay, accounting-wise, though, it makes no difference. It's simply a question of having cash on hand. And from what we've been told, they have a lot of cash on hand. And if anything, you could go back to them and say, hey, you want the money up front. Well, then it's not 40 million, it's 38 million or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, you still open the door for clubs asking you to do it every single time, where it's better for you to do over 5 years than doing straight away, right?
It depends on what situation you're in. If you're sitting on, if cash isn't an issue, it can be better for you to pay straight away.
I expect them to respond positively to what Lyon asking anyway. So it'd be a good thing to have to talk about after. Christian Eriksen is back training with Ajax. Gab, an announcement from Brentford seems imminent as well. How happy are you to see him back on the training
pitch? I was delighted because obviously he'd been back training with Gasol before that in Switzerland, but I never saw that, and when Ajax tweeted it out,
it was lovely.
It was sweet. It was one of those stories. Let's just hope he stays safe.
Of course.
Senegal huff and puff to get past Cape Verde, and there's controversy over suspected head injury to Sadio Mane. Jules, they were the favorites going on. This has been a hard slog. We touched upon this earlier on the podcast, but you expected more, no?
Yeah, really. In terms of, the defensive solidity, he's there, was there, will always be there. Mendy, Koulibaly, they're so strong. They play with three defensive midfielders. Pretty much that's what they are. So, again, you've got amazing protection to your back four, which is already good, to a keeper that is the best in the world, or one of the best in the world. So, no problem. The thing is the creativity. And the head coach tried to change it a little bit for the last 16 game. Pape Gueye started and played in a more advanced position. But, again, he's not a really super creative player. So, I don't know.
This is the same Pape Gueye, by the way, who's about to get suspended.
Yeah, well, who had been suspended, but right, because there was an appeal launched by Marseille that has been suspended. But... Yeah, that's it. I would love to see, as we referred earlier with Ed Dove, as Mané in a 10 almost, and two wingers, and then the striker, and only two defensive midfielders. But we'll see what they do. But it's not going to be easy against Equatorial Guinea in the quarterfinals, seeing how well they've defended in their game and how strong and solid they've been. So it'd be quite fascinating to see. Comoros did not pull off their fairy tale upset, losing to host Cameroon 2-1. Although, Gab, Youssouf and Shangana scored one of the best goals of the season, not just the tournament. And Shakir Alader's performance in goal won't be forgotten either for a while.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Alader's performance, because obviously, a 5'7" left back going in goal, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, as we heard, I didn't know this. You know, he was 30, felt like it had passed him by. And it was funny with him like moving his arms incorrectly, whatever. But that free kick, it's kind of overshadowed by the outcome and everything.
Of course, but incredible. Wow. It came a little bit too late. I think it was 81st minute.
Yeah,
I know. Before, they would have put more pressure on and maybe could have come back to 2-2, considering they were 2-0 down.
Christian Pulisic gave an interview to NBC Sports where he said it's been, quote, tough at Chelsea, unquote, and, quote, he hasn't always been playing in the positions he wants to play in, unquote. Jules, some in the rather mischievous English media are saying this is another Lukaku situation. Is it?
No, I don't think it is. It's very different. For all the love I've got for Christian Pulisic, it's not the same status.
Lukaku costs a ton of money.
I'm not saying how much they cost. It's not the same status. And I'm happy that...
It doesn't matter if Pulisic...
No. I'm happy that Christian is not happy because he's not playing well. I saw him again looking quite miserable on the bench.
When Lukaku's not happy, it's a problem.
No. I'm just saying that I want Pulisic not to be happy. To want to play more, right. To want to play maybe in a position where he can have more influence on the team. Not, I think he means he's played right wing back this season, which I can understand if you're him, how frustrated. You don't play much, and when you play sometimes, you play in a right wing position. I can see why you're not happy. But it's down to him to show Tuchel that he deserves to play more, like Hakim Ziyech has done. You know, Ziyech was not always Tuchel's cup of tea, and yet he earned his place in the team. Played great against Spurs, and now you would expect we'll have a good run into the team. Pulisic can do exactly the same.
I am winding up a little bit over the Lukaku thing. As you know, we disagree on this. I think they could have not made a big deal out of the Lukaku thing. I think this is pretty innocent from Pulisic. I don't think there's any ulterior motive or anything.
No, I would not.
He does have a point, but then he goes back to he's been used in different positions because there's a ton of players who are attacking midfielders, second striker types, and many of them are just as good, if not better. And that's a difficulty.
Exactly. Bad news for Bayern, Gab. Alphonso Davies, myocarditis?
Myocarditis?
Myocarditis.
I'm not a doctor.
Sorry, I know how to say in French. In English, it's the first time ever I said it, I think. Following his recovery from COVID means he will miss 3 months of action. How big a blow is this?
It's a blow for him, blow for Canada, of course, as well. Yeah. I think it puts those back three plans on hold, unless it's the version that we saw.
You don't play Elsa Berlin every week, though.
No, but if you have that more solid back, look, I don't, that version we saw, I like that.
Pava, I love that.
Upamecano and
Lucas.
Upamecano or Sula, while he's there, and Lucas Hernandez. Look, those are three center backs. Let them be center backs, right?
Yeah, but then that means you play Gnabry as a left, you know, as a left wing back.
It's fine. You're not, just, unless you're playing Manchester City, what do you care against most teams?
I love it. I'm all for it. Coman on the right, Gnabry on the left as kind of wing backs is
you know, perfect. You could even add another central midfielder into the mix if you want more cover and want somebody who can slide across, and if you don't trust Gnabry to come back, that's fine. You can, you know, you have options to do that.
Yeah.
I don't have an issue with it.
No.
You like your Techers, Jules, and we saw two unbelievable goals in Morocco's 2-1 win over Malawi. Much as I loved Ashraf Hakimi's free kick, for me, Gabadinho Hango's strike was more special. But
it was incredible because it's so far away, isn't it? Incredible, the trajectory of the ball, the way the ball comes down so quickly into the goal as well. But, you know, Hakimi is my boy. And to score the winning goal...
He's not Spanish.
He plays for PSG, which is my team. So he's my boy, of course. Every PSG player is my boy. And I think it's a free kick for a left footer, and with his right foot he goes the other side of the wall, right in the top corner. Fantastic goal. We're seeing magic from Minos at this AFCON. We mentioned that a little bit before, but it's not just Equatorial Guinea. It's the Gambia that have achieved a minor miracle, Gab.
Yeah, or, you know, as we heard from Dub there, Gambitalia, because I think we need to take a little bit of credit for this. No, just kidding.
I knew that was coming.
Obviously, strong links between the Gambia and Italy football-wise, and you know, people like Musa Barrow. Yeah, look, they're not always fun to watch. They stiffen up, but what do you want? This is a teeny, teeny, tiny country.
Yeah.
Where, according to Wikipedia, football's not even the most popular sport. According to Wikipedia.
Yeah, what's the most popular
sport? It's wrestling, which I had no idea. I didn't encounter with some Gambians on Twitter saying, yeah, I don't really know about that, maybe in certain areas. So maybe it's something they got wrong. Maybe it's been updated since then. But phenomenal run from Gambia. Youssef Moukoko's agent says it's not a foregone conclusion that he's going to extend his deal at Borussia Dortmund. Jules, his contract expires in 2023.
Ooh.
Most of us assume that Erling Haaland will be packing his bags this summer. What if they lose Moukoko too?
No, I expect this one to change. I think he's in the right environment. Maybe he would have loved to play a bit more this season. Daniel Malin's arriving maybe sort of like unsettled him a little bit, but come on, there's plenty of time, plenty of games to be played. He's still so young. So I'd be surprised if he was not extending there and deciding to leave.
But you can see why he's in no rush.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly,
he's in a strong position.
He's in a strong position. If he just says, let's see where we are at the end of the season. I mean, I would wait until Haaland leaves.
Yeah,
force the club to make a decision. You'd rather believe in me. What?
Dortmund know that. They're trying to put a bit of, not pressure, but they're going to say, for them, the sooner he says, I'm staying, I'm going to sign this new deal, the better. But they're not stupid. They know he's going to wait a bit and see what the options are in the summer. He has to, and they know that. Reports in Spain say that Sergi Nodest has no intention of leaving this January. Does that make sense? Not leaving Barcelona. And I think they were trying to even maybe do a swap with Meunier. I mean, like, this would be something.
The Meunier swap I didn't get at all, also, because I'm assuming Meunier is on a decent contract as well. So how's
he's
that?
He's 30 as well. Like, why?
No, I think that's
that
silly.
That can't be true.
Look, I think this is purely one of those contract plans, right? To try to get Morata, try to get more flexibility under the masa salarial. This is the one guy where somebody can give you real money for, right? 20 million, 25 million, whatever it is. You've amortized some of it, so you can show a little profit, but you get his wages off the books. But equally, if I'm Dest, why would I move? The guy ahead of me is Dani Alves. Is
55,
what is he, 30? It feels like it, right? He's going to get injured. He's going to break down. He can't play every game. Mm-hmm. I'm here. I'm training with some of the best players in the world, some of the best facilities in the world. It's not going to impact me with the national team. I can always revisit the situation in the summer.
Yeah, 100%.
Why would I move to go to a crappier club?
It wouldn't
make any sense.
I'm with you.
So, you know, it would have to be very, very attractive. Maybe somebody who really, really wants him for him to move. Jules, I know, and our listeners know, that you like your club jerseys.
Yes.
And while most clubs sign big deals with sportswear companies like Puma or New Balance, I won't name those other two, Napoli have, of course, taken a different route, signing up with Emporio Armani sports brand EA7. Does this mean that they're more stylish, or just that they make more shirts?
No, I mean, the style, of course, you can say it that way. Certainly, they work with people with a different view to things because they're more used to fashion. What's interesting is, like, they have a new shirt coming up for Valentine's Day, a Valentine's Day special edition of the Napoli shirt, which might not be a surprise to you, Gab, because they also had a Halloween special edition. They had a Diego Maradona special edition on top already of their home kit, away kit, third kit. I mean, what's next? They got a Marcotti special edition for your birthday or something?
I think this is aimed at collectors.
I know, but come on, they're €125 each or something when you have all the names and the shirt and the badges.
But they're guaranteed to appreciate in value like non-fungible tokens, which I believe is the next question.
Exactly, Gab. Next question, non-fungible tokens or NFTs are all the rage, Gab, but John Terry is in trouble with the Premier League for his Little Apes NFTs.
Yeah, so leaving aside the appropriateness of having Little Apes NFTs and sending them to your former teammates of color, as he did with Willian, he's in trouble because he's tweeting about this, or not him, his social media manager is tweeting about this incessantly, and he's tweeted a picture of the Premier League trophy, which apparently is licensed.
Yeah, of course.
Now, because
it
John Terry's adopted this role now at Chelsea, he's subject to Premier League rules. He can't profit off it.
Yeah.
So he's got an investigation. It just all feels kind of very crass.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. And especially if you've got on top of it reservations about NFTs and, you know,
well,
the whole
and just
process.
Now we've seen Iconic, which structure. Of course was a de facto NFT company. They've gone under. We've seen them sponsor, do deals with a whole bunch of things from La Liga to Crystal Palace, a bunch of different clubs. So it's a space which I think needs some level
of
regulation.
Yeah.
Right. That brings us to an end here, Jules. But we got to come back on Monday because. Transfer window is coming to a close. You know what that means.
Yes.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.